to the Wicked Wallflowers Club. I'm Jenny Nordback.
And I'm Sarah Hawley. This week's episode is with Mila Vane, who also writes as Mel Jean Brooke. We talk about her epic barbarian fantasy series, A Gathering of Dragons, which, by the way, includes dinosaurs, as well as her amazing world building across multiple series. We discuss her nuanced, flawed characters who may start out as anti-heroes, but go on powerful journeys of emotional growth, redemption, and recovery from trauma. And Sarah, that's me, loses her mind about her favorite author. Without further ado, here is our interview with Mila Vane.
Okay, but wait, I actually do have some ado to add before we start the interview. As a special treat for October to celebrate villains, if you will, we are going to feature an audio sample from one of Katie Roberts' villains' books at the end of each episode. So at the end of the interview, make sure you stick around so that you can catch a special preview of one of her villains' books. Okay, for real this time. No further ado. Here is our interview with Mila Vane. All right, we are really excited. It's actually difficult to put into words the excitement to be joined today by Mila Vane, who is also Mel Jean Brooke. Welcome. And when Sarah and I first started the podcast, we really didn't think anybody was going to want to talk to us because that's how we are. And we had this sort of very short, oh shit list of like, oh my God, can you imagine if what we got, you know, this very short list of authors on and how we would basically just die. And I hadn't read anything of yours at that point, but Sarah is and was a super fan and was like, holy shit, can you imagine if one day we got to talk to Mel Jean Brooke? And here we are.
Yeah, this is where I'm prepared to embarrass you. You are my favorite romance novelist of all time.
Oh my God.
I think your writing is beautiful. I think your characters are complex. Your world building is insane. And I've just like reread your books over and over, Demon Forged being a particular favorite of mine. So yes, you have been my dream guest from day one. So I'm sort of like,
I don't even know what to say. That's like, I'm like trying to think, is this like a real podcast or is like, this is the one where they like jump out and say, ah, this is all a joke.
That would be really mean.
That's not something I expect to hear. I mean, there are so many amazing authors and I mean, I love what I do. I absolutely love what I do and I love my work. But, you know, there's always that feeling of like, there's always the authors who are better, you know, because you're always like striving to be better. And so to hear that is somewhat surreal and unreal, but completely awesome. So I love you for it.
It's been like a multi-step process where we're like, all right, we're ready to do this. Like, let's get her on or let's see if we can get her on. And then there was like the email back and forth where you had agreed to do it. And Sarah was just texting me like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I come from more, I was late to romance. I only picked up romance reading in college due to Jenny, but I was sci-fi fantasy before that. So reading the fantasy elements, the barbarian stuff, like the steampunk, everything you've written, I'm like, it is right in my wheelhouse and just so well done. So that's me screaming about you.
We usually play it pretty cool, but at some point you just have to fangirl. Like it's,
Yeah.
I understand because I fangirl on so many other authors, not necessarily myself, but hey, I'll take the fangirling for me today. But that's awesome. And I think that there always is that sense of when somebody's like the author that just clicks with you, you know, because there's something about the interests or the way that they write or their voice, something about it just works all around. And that is just the most amazing feeling to have as an author, you know, to think. And oftentimes you can kind of like think, how are you doing as an author too by that person's reaction? Because if they're like the ideal reader and you're like disappointing them at all, then you're like, well, maybe I went off a little bit there because, you know, I mean, because there is that sense of you're writing for yourself. And at least I write the books that I want to read. And so if mm-hmm. as a reader, you know, someone who is like me as a reader is being disappointed, then maybe I'm like failing as an author a little bit. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it's an awesome way to kind of gauge how your writing is going and how you're growing as an author and, you know, just expressing your voice. Because if something is like totally off and totally wrong, and a reader who is like, you know, has liked everything is suddenly like, you know, sometimes that's okay because, you know, you need to do different things. But sometimes you're like, well, maybe I went a little bit too crazy on that one.
I hope no one's actually like, well, I love everything you did except for this one. Like, that seems mean to me. Also hasn't
People
happened
are
with me.
Shitty.
Yeah. Like, I am here for all the blood and guts and epicness. So, yeah, you certainly haven't disappointed me. But I know some readers can be a little rude occasionally.
No, I don't think it's rudeness. I think it's more like, you know, you go to every book and you really, really want to like that book. And so if you are a fan of someone and then they start writing something different and it's like not at all what you wanted, then there's that disappointment of the potential of loving something and you don't love it. And it's a sad thing. And I hate, you know, that readers go through that. I don't necessarily think of it as rudeness. It's more like, I don't know. It's like, you know, or like, it's even like, you know, trying food when you see something and it looks so good and then you taste it and it's like, oh crap, that's not very good at all. You don't want to eat it anymore. But you like spent that time and your money and now you've got that taste in your mouth and you don't want it there anymore. So you've got to go get something else and maybe like a Big Mac, even though it's horrible because it'll just like flush away the taste. But
I mean, we get the impulse you're talking about, and we don't think having that reaction to a book is rude. We think telling the author that you've had that reaction is rude.
Oh, yeah. See?
See, yeah. If I just don't like a book, like, I am probably just going to back away slowly and not say anything, unless I don't like it for really egregious reasons everyone needs to know about. It's interesting because you've this Millevane is sort of the next evolution of your Mel Jean Brook identity. Now you are going into these barbarian fantasy. And I think you'd mentioned that the reason for the name change is partially because it's much bloodier and much darker.
Right.
Was that what went into the decision to do that?
That was part of the decision. I mean, I have to like take like a 10-year step back because as I was writing the Guardian series, wrapping up the Guardian series, which is like this 8-book paranormal romance series,
yes,
that was like
so
each
good.
One was very long and the world building was very kind of dense. I mean, I've always done dense world building. And then I was starting in on the Iron Sea series, which was a steampunk romance series. Mm-hmm. And I felt very much like I was locked into this, I guess a brand of Mel Jean Brook of being like a certain tone and a certain way of writing. And I even then I was kind of like, I want to just do something that's darker. I want to explore some themes that are darker. But I knew that if Mel Jean's readers came along with it, it might be like that shock to the system, like that I was expecting this thing and I got this thing. And reader expectations are so important in romance, in any genre, actually. But I was really afraid that there would be that just like horrified step back. And for some there was that reaction, and I mean that's okay, but that's what it was. And I actually wasn't even intending to let anybody know I was writing as Millevane. That was kind of an accident that it got out. But
whoops.
Yeah, whoops. No, that was one of those situations where I was like, I had talked to my editor and I was like, you know, I really want to do this dark barbarian fantasy stuff. And I said, I might, you know. And this was before, you know, this was around 2010, 2012. And so it was kind of before self-publishing really exploded, where the kind of dark romance became more popular. And so I was like, I knew I might be like treading pretty close to some themes and ideas that would maybe not go over so well. And I was like, you know what, let me just kind of go in as like a pen name that's kind of private, and if it works, great, and if not, you know, maybe I don't like lose all my Mel Jean readers either. But then when the when the deal was announced, when I sold the novella, it was, you know, Mel Jean Brooke writing as Mila Vane. It was like, whoops, on publisher's launcher. So yeah, there went my anonymity and goodbye. But it was okay. I mean, you know, in the way that things worked out and the way that the genre has evolved and what people have become more accustomed to reading, I don't really think, I mean, it is dark and I feel like I need to warn readers, but it's mm-hmm. not as, I think, shocking as it might have been 10 years ago. If like A Heart of Blood and Ashes had like landed on the scene, I think it would have been an entirely different reaction then.
Yeah. I've had some really interesting text exchanges to that effect where there are some people who are like, this is bonkers and I'm really into it. And like this happens and then this happens. And then, and you're like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's bonkers. And then I've had other friends who are like, what? No, it's not. Like my dear friend Lee Kramer was like, I don't think this is bonkers. And I started giving her examples of things that people have thought. And she's like, okay, I mean, I guess so. But
I mean, that's like me where I'm like, it doesn't seem too far. Nothing seems too far.
No.
It's fine.
Totally fine. Blood of your enemies on your hands while you're jacking him off.
Yes.
It's okay.
That's hot, man. Use proper lube usage.
Oh, you know, I actually had a writer friend tell me that was like going to lose all my readers. And I actually was really afraid for, you know, a short time, not very long, because then I emailed my editor like almost crying, because this is after the galleys were in it. And, you know, like at that point, you can't really change anything anyway. I'm like, am I going to lose everybody? She's like, no, you know, you're okay. Don't worry about it. But
the bloody hand job or?
Yeah, the bloody hand job scene. And, yeah, she was just like,
the rest of us are like fans for life.
Yeah, we're like,
that.
Yeah, more. Do more. Kill your enemies and then get it.
I know. At the time when she, you know, when she was giving me the feedback, she was like, are you really sure you want this scene in? And I was like, yeah, I really, you know, I really like what it does. I mean, I know that it's like kind of gross. <There's> like, but I was like, it just really makes this, it really clear what Yvonne's, you know, character is and how she's going to try to take charge of a situation that it seems like she's, you know, has no control. It's a weird scene. And I understand why people kind of draw away from it, because there is that, you know, she's in a position where she doesn't have as much physical power. And yet at the same time, she flips it around to kind of take control and to tell him exactly what this relationship is going to be, even though he doesn't really believe it yet. I mean, he, poor guy. Oh, poor Maddock. I mean, he just did not know what he was getting into. But
this is A Heart of Blood and Ashes, which is the first book in the Barbarian series.
Yeah, and so let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
And
maybe, oh, yeah, we should.
Yeah. What is the Barbarian series?
Do you want to give it a go, or do you want me to read the description that's in front of me?
You know, I'll just give it a go because okay. So the Barbarian series, I really love kind of that old time adventure-y, cheesy 80s Conan the Barbarian type of sword and sorcery fantasy. But of course, you know, there are problems with a lot of that type of fantasy and misogyny and the rampant rape all over the place. And so I really wanted to kind of create that style of adventuring fantasy, but with a heavy dose of romance. And so that's what this is. This is like basically what happens when you take a girl who watched way too many 80s fantasy movies and mixed it together with Jurassic Park and a bunch of other like romance novels from the time I was like 8 years old reading. So it just kind of like all percolated inside of me and just kind of came out in this like giant book. And so there's dinosaurs and everything fun that I can think of to shove in there. And
saber-toothed tigers as personal pets.
Right. Because, you know, the world building is that basically these gods come. It's like 250 million years in the future of Earth, and there's been an extinction event, And these gods come and they resurrect a whole bunch of stuff and add some magic to it. And that way I can kind of like play with all these things real and all these things that are fantasy and kind of mix them together. But I mean, who doesn't want dinosaurs in their books? I mean, if I could, yeah. I would add them to like contemporary novels and throw them in, because why not dinosaurs?
Well, now I want to read that. The Mel Jean Brook rom-com with dinosaurs in the background.
I think it would be amazing. And I just love those. I love any kind of like fantasy movie that has like giant monsters or, you know, that kind of thing to fight. And a lot of those are science fiction instead of fantasy, but oh, those are so much fun. And so that's what I wanted to write as a romance. I wanted to have that kind of setting where the world is just really fun. And, but then of course my world building brain takes over and everything is kind of dense and complicated and involved. And, but that's basically what it is. So it's like a sword and sorcery adventure series with a whole lot of sexy stuff and romance.
Yeah.
And where does that world building even start? Like, are you writing the story and building the mythology in the world as you go, or are you kind of outlining the rules of the world first?
It's kind of a mix of both. So I know a lot of like basic information about the world, but I think the world is too big to have it all in your head at once. So there is some stuff that I'll create for that book that becomes, you know, canon within the entire larger world. Like, there's this one goddess figure called Silver-Fingered Rani, and I knew that she was my death figure, and she takes, you know, she rides upon a dragon, and she takes the dead into the arms of Temra, who is like this mother goddess earth figure. So I knew that. But as I was writing A Heart of Blood and Ashes, it was actually only supposed to be a novella at the beginning. And
so,
and I guess I should back up and say what this story is about.
Yeah.
This story is about a hero who, he's like a barbarian writer, warrior type, who he finds out that his parents have been killed by someone else who is by another like neighboring kingdom or realm. The king there. Sorry, I'm like totally messing this up.
But you're doing great.
You're doing better than I would be.
So there's this alliance between all these groups of people, and the alliance was formed because a generation past, this horrible sorcerer guy came through and just basically, devastated the land, devastated everybody, and he's called the Destroyer because I'm so like clever with names.
he's got a brand. He knows what his brand is.
He is. That's what he does. He destroys. And then he went on to destroy the rest of the world. I mean, he didn't hang around and rule or anything, but he did like leave some bad stuff behind. And so this alliance formed to take care of this bad stuff and also to stay together in case he comes back. So this alliance is about 30 years old, and Maddox's parents have just been killed by the ruler of one of the other realms within the alliance. And so he's like, I'm going to take my vengeance because he is a barbarian and he's going to get his vengeance. And then the alliance council tells him, no, you can't do that. You can't harm any of his sons, because what nobody knows is that the other king has a daughter too, and she's going to inherit the throne because it's a matriarchal society. And so he goes and he kidnaps her, and he's going to kill her because he's going to get his revenge. And if he can't take his revenge on the sons, he's going to take the revenge on the daughter. And then she's like, no, let's get married and team up and kill my father and all my brothers instead. Well, except for one. There's one nice brother. Because I couldn't like give her like only bad brothers. like then people might think I'm like a man hater or something. I'm not. I just like to kill brothers, apparently. I have one brother. He's very nice. I don't want to kill him, but poor guy. He grew up with the opposite, actually. Sorry, this is a personal thing, but he had 5 older sisters.
Oh.
And so like this was like a reverse situation from us growing up. Poor guy. poor guy, really. Sorry, Brad, for all that we've done to you in your life. But, so I was, I don't even remember what we were talking about. Well,
so they marry because she also wants to take down her dad. But it's sort of a arranged marriage, enemies to lovers. He is having a very hard time with feelings for her. Oh,
and well, he's like, just poor guy. I mean, he's just grieving. He's raging. And then he assumes this woman, Yvonne, is a part of his parents' murder and took part in it and arranged it. And then she's like, no, I just wanted to escape so that I could kill all of my family.
That's exactly the kind of heroine I love. Let's kill everyone.
So I remember where we started with this. So I was talking about Silver-Fingered Ronnie. Uh-huh. So as I was world building, I knew I had this goddess figure, and but I hadn't really like developed that very far besides, you know, what their basic traits were. So as I was writing A Heart of Blood and Ashes, I was like, I really need to dive a little bit deeper into this Parsathian culture, because Matic is a Parsathian. And so that's where it kind of came from. So I kind of knew the basic stuff, but as I was writing this book, I needed a basis for what the culture was, his culture was. And so I took Silver-Fingered Ronnie, who, you know, flies the souls of the dead into the arms of Mother Temra. And that's what the warriors do. They basically send their enemies into the arms of Mother Temra. And so I really kind of pulled and tugged as many strings out of that as I could. So like their appearance is kind of based on what this goddess looks like. And then the fact that they can't lie, I tied that to the goddess too. And there's just a bunch of things that weren't really developed before I started writing that I developed as I was writing so that I could deepen the world building. And that's what I just do with a lot of it. I have like this basic idea and then I just start digging as I write.
Do you have like a big index next to you, like this massive book of all the things, so you don't forget the names of, oh, who's that minor god and who's that person? And
oh, no, I write in Scrivener, which is this...
I love Scrivener.
Yeah, it's this really great word processing program for writers that lets you keep a lot of like notes and information in like the sidebar. And so I kind of have, you know, little things to remind me of like how to spell things, or like for example, like there's this god called Enom, and he's the sun god, but he's also like a god of storms, and I haven't really brought in the storm aspect, but you know, I just write god of storms in my notes so that I remember that kind of thing. But no, I don't really keep like a series Bible or information like that. I just kind of make sure I have all the characters' names on the side so I can keep the spellings accurate, and like maybe some weird identifying traits, but mostly I keep those in my head. So it's pretty much all out of my head. Since because I just make it up as I go along. I mean, it seems like, oh, dense world building, but no, I just make it stuff up as I go along.
Well, it's funny because you've done dense world building in three very different worlds, between Guardians, Iron Seas, and this. Do your previous universes, are they still in your head? Like, do you remember all the intricacies of the world building for the Guardians, or does it kind of go away after a while?
No, I remember it. And I think it's because after writing so many books in that series, it just kind of gets pounded in permanently. It's not really, like every once in a while, I'll think, oh yeah, I forgot that. It wasn't necessarily that I forgot, it's that I don't think about it for a while. So I guess that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Heart and Blood and Ashes, I have to, my big selling point for this when I'm like pitching it to people is like, go read it. And I know what our listeners love, so I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up. There's a mean kidnapping is the way. It's like you've got Matic and the world building and like his parents have been murdered and you're just like fascinated in those early chapters. And then Yvonne appears on the page and you're like, holy shit, she's a badass. Like you can instantly see that she's strong in ways that defy that warrior strength that he has. And you're like here for it. And then it's like a mean kidnapping where he can't handle his feelings and he's completely out of line and he's being a bastard.
Yeah,
and you know he's going to have to make up for it later. And it's just like catnip. So anytime people are like, I don't know if I'm in the headspace for like a big fantasy, I'm like, no, there is a mean kidnapping. And they're like, okay.
except it's not necessarily a kidnapping because she's like, take me with you.
Yeah, she's like, true. Yeah, let's get married. I think she's like, well, yeah, I'm on my way to power making an alliance. And he's like, aha, my captive. wait a moment.
True.
There's so often in the book where he does not really understand what's going on. I mean, he's just, I mean, I said it before, he's just way in over his head with her. And it's a lot of fun. Like you had mentioned, you know, the first chapters being a lot of fun to read and the world building that's there. But I looked for so many ways to cut them down and to make them shorter, because I know that like that's not everyone's thing, you know, that dense world building that pops up at the beginning. And I couldn't do it. And so I was on Twitter the other day and Jen from Faded Mates, you know, she was telling someone, if you have to, just skip to chapter 3. And I would also say that too. It's not necessarily that I don't think all that information is important, because it absolutely is. If it wasn't, I wouldn't have put it in the book. But I know if anybody is struggling with the whole dense fantasy world building, chapter 3 is kind of where the whole, you know, I'm going to go kidnap this girl and kill her for my revenge plot gets set up without all of the politics and stuff. And so I would say, you know, if you have anybody who's having trouble with that aspect of it, yeah, definitely like just skip to chapter, maybe skim through the first two chapters and then skip to chapter 3, because the book absolutely takes off when Yvain shows up. I mean,
oh my God, as soon as she appears on page. And I've actually said that to a few people too, where they're like, it's so much information. And I'm like, don't worry about it too much. Like, it'll make sense later. And yeah, mm-hmm. So the summary is like, Matic is a warrior, he's a badass, people respect him, there's this interesting world, there's politics, his parents have been murdered, and now he's going to kidnap her to get his revenge there.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Right to it.
Yeah, and I've always liked the variety of strengths you show in your heroines, that you don't have to be a warrior. So the heroine of the next book is a warrior type mm-hmm. and a drunk. So I like that you let your characters be flawed as well. But you've always had like very nuanced varieties of what it means to be a heroine and to be strong, and that there's definitely more than one way to do it.
That's, I think, I'm one of those writers who's very heroine-centric when I write. I mean, it's all about the heroine. It's, is this hero going to be good enough for this woman for the rest of her life? And mm-hmm. usually the answer is, well, I mean, not really, but this is the best that you're going to get, because I just love the fact that, you know, we talk a lot about romance being for women and being written by women. And this for me was a lot of how I expressed my absolute love for women and their strengths and the way, all the different ways that they can be heroes. And it's just, I love it. I mean, this is my favorite thing to do, is to really draw out all the ways that I see women being strong. And they definitely aren't being, you know, strong in the same way. Sometimes you just have to be a motherly type, or sometimes you have to be like the hard warrior type, or sometimes you have to be, you know, drunk and depressed and at the end of your rope, like poor Lizanne in A Touch of Stone and Snow. And then, you know, come back from that in some way. And so, yeah, the heroine's journey is always like my focus personally, even though like, for example, in like A Heart of Blood and Ashes, Yvain is, I love her to death, but it's Matic who really goes through the huge character change. And so it's, his journey is like more, is like bigger than hers character wise, but she's like my center of the book, so mm-hmm. I guess it works out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one thing you mentioned with all 80s fantasy movies, that there was rape all over the place. And as a content warning, which you're very clear about, the background of this world is sort of trauma and rape when the Destroyer came through. And the fact that this whole world is basically traumatized and recovering from that trauma together is, I think, interesting because you're taking this something that made people feel fragile and made them feel broken. And you've got a lot of very nuanced people rising out of that. So I love the anything to do. Like, I just love the way that you deal with like trauma. And I like that in The Guardians too. It's part of why Demon Forged is one of my favorites. It's just like the nuances of trauma and how to be strong in the wake of it. I guess I don't have questions for you. I just keep telling you how much I like things. but I do think that's interesting because you were specifically mentioning there's rape all over the place in the 80s things. And so you've still got that element of that brutal world here, but that's not the focus.
Right.
It's not like a titillating or scandalously horrifying thing.
Right. And, you know, I have to admit, you know, I kind of wavered a lot on how much I should still include it because I could have made a world where it's like, you know, not an issue ever at all. But I didn't want it to be, and I decided, you know, that's not going to be a genuine world. It's not going to be a world where there's villains, these horrible villains. And I thought, you know, the best I can do, maybe not the best I can do, but one, I can make sure that consent is in the world building where it's against the law across the board, that if you rape, you are this horrible person. You know, there's no question that consent is important because the goddess who was raped, she like literally birthed justice and law from that event. And so like, so that was, you know, it's hard because it is like, it's such a huge part of the world building. You can't get away from it. And I know people don't necessarily want to be in a world where that's such a huge issue, but I also felt like it was more genuine in terms of exploring the world and what they've gone through and what they're trying to build out of it, because it is a really dark world building, but I like to think that the people who are in it are fighting kind of relentlessly toward hope and toward love. Like, you know, the heroes, so often you get, you know, heroes who are, you know, they've been hurt. And so they just refuse to love after that, or they are afraid to love, or they don't believe in love. And that's never going to be an issue in these books. You know, they yearn for love. They know the power of it. They might not think that they ever personally will have it beyond like, say, maybe their parents love them. You know, so it's not necessarily that they think that they're going to get it for themselves, but they know that it's a powerful, strong force. And that's what I feel is the center of the world building and not necessarily the darkness. But I know that you kind of don't get one without the other. So and you don't get the healing without the trauma. You can't get both. You can't have something. Although, thank goodness, you can have love without trauma all the time. Yeah. But you know, I think that was, you know, something I really struggled with, especially after. So the first novella in this series came out in 2014. And I remember that it was, there were a lot of people who were really upset with the rape aspects of it. And I totally understood it. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't like, oh my God, why don't they see what I'm doing? It's more like, yeah, I understand that this is going to be a very difficult world for some people to spend time in. And so I tried to think, you know, how can I make that, you know, better? And in a lot of ways you can't. See, there's just some things you can't make better. You can't make it easy. But I would hope that after people have gone through the books, if they do choose to read them, because I know that a lot of people just won't, and that's fine because, you know, there's some things I don't want to subject myself to either. But I would hope that when they come out of it, they have that feeling of no matter what the heck happens in the world, it can get better. And there is hope and there is like love and that those kind of things can get us through to the end and kill the destroyers or mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah,
sorry.
For sure.
That was like a very long
don't
rambling.
Be sorry. I love that. I like hearing that, and that is interesting. That the light doesn't mean as much without the darkness. So
Yeah. I mean, that's something Sarah and I have both been drawn to over the years in the books that we, there's like books I enjoy and then books that like impact me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes the difference is like the happy ending or, you know, the positive outcome is like more earned or like it just feels more satisfying when it comes on the heels of that suffering and that healing and you've really had to fight for it. Mm-hmm. So I guess we could keep going down that path, but I'm tempted to. So we've got like a barbarian world and, you know, there it's high stakes for everybody all the time. And you've got blood and murder and revenge and sacrifice and whatever. Am I mistaken or did I see on Twitter that someone emailed you to complain about the use of the word fuck in this world?
No, that's true. And it wasn't the first time either. That was just the time that I kind of hit my limit of how many times can I hear this or how many times can people tell me not to use the word cunt? And I'm like, I love the word cunt. And, you know, it's funny because like, again, this is like 10 years ago. I remember when I wrote Demon Blood, and that was in, I think it came out in 2010. And I used the word pussy. And I remember thinking, oh my God, it might be too much. And it seems so weird and stupid now that I was like so worried over using pussy, even though it was like in that character's, you know, it made sense for the character that I used it for, because that's true of every word that you ever use, is it makes sense for the character you're using it for. And so, and now I'm like, yeah, I'm going to write cunt or I'm going to write fuck everywhere I want to write it because it makes so much more sense than not writing it. And I just, yeah, so when somebody, God, I mean, it's like one of those situations too where God bless readers. I mean, honestly, I mean that sincerely, because I absolutely love the fact that they enjoy the books and they write me. But this time it was just like, I would have enjoyed the book except that you use the word fuck. And I was just like, with that one word in all of like 160,000 words, it was the fuck. It wasn't the bloody hand job. It wasn't like the horse dying. It wasn't, there were so many other things in there that like, I could imagine.
This is what you have a problem with.
Yes, it's the word fuck. And like, what else are they supposed to say? I'm like,
I want the walker going, oh, shoot. Shucks. Oh, the destroyer is back to kill
us
all.
Goodness me.
Oh, dear.
I mean, what else is a barbarian going to say then? But, you know, fuck. And the funny thing is that he doesn't use it as a swear word. Nobody uses it as a swear word. It's not a swear. It's an act. It's a verb. You know, I would love to use fuck as like an adjective and an adverb. And because that's like my natural, like, speech patterns, like, you know, like, give me that fucking sword. But no, they don't use it in that way at all. And so it's only used in terms of sexual intercourse, because they're not going to say, you know, let's make love gently on my sweaty horse. I have this big giant short sword. Let me sheathe it repeatedly and violently into your like quivering wetness, or I don't know. I mean, no, he's going to fuck her cunt. I mean, I just, oh. So I was just like, I don't understand sometimes how these little, I mean, I understand everybody has these little hangups, you know, but it just doesn't make sense. And I ended up on my contact page, I wrote a little message that said, you know, I understand that some people don't like the use of the word fuck. They don't write the use of the word cunt, because those are the ones I get, you know, emailed most about. But I was like, you know, so this isn't something that you would use, but you're not in this world. You are not, you know, fighting dinosaurs or whatever. Believe me, if you were fighting dinosaurs, you would say fuck. I mean, I would say it a hell of a lot.
I'm seeing this on, I'm looking at your contact thing. It's like frequently asked questions before you hit send. Number one, maps and character lists. Number two, release schedules. Number three, vulgar language.
like, at the, and you know what? At the bottom of every single page in my website, it says, this is like a vulgar, like, it says like vulgarity and like bloody violence or something. Like, it, there's a content warning on every single page of my website that's like, you know, here's a content warning if you need it, but, you know, this is vulgar, it's bloody, it's, you know, I just... Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, but, you know, we do get those a lot, or just the little, like, you know, I know of contemporary writers, I think most often it's, you know, when Jesus pops up, or, you know, say, like, say, oh, Jesus, or something. And I get that people are, you know, unhappy that you're cursing or using the Lord's name in vain, but I'm like, it's all character. People don't just randomly say that for no reason. They say it because it fits who they are. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing to email someone about. I'm never going to read your books again because you use the word fuck. like, why not just stop reading? Why do you have to like email? Like, I'm not going to change it now anyway.
It's in print. It's out there.
It makes me laugh that I've seen there's a TV show called The Last Kingdom, and it's like the Vikings and the Saxons, and, you know, it's these like crude Vikings who in many ways are barbarians. And I don't know if it's because of the network that it's on or what, but they don't use the word fuck. But even those writers recognized that they needed like a word that was equivalent to that, that, you know, is understood to be a fill-in for fuck. Mm-hmm. And so when they're talking about, like, I'm going to fuck her, or, you know, she has been fucked or whatever, it's, they use hump. And it's, I laugh every single time.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, it's these big, like, hump, barbaric, braided hair, bones in their hair, men, and they're saying, like, I'm going to hump her, I'm going to hump you. And
that's what I said in, like, second grade, you know, like, when you're like, oh, they humped, you know, like, it was like, oh my God, that's like a second grade.
And it's
grader.
So clearly they want to use the word fuck, but they can't, like, for whatever, like, they've just decided they're not going to use that word. And it's like, guys, seriously, hump.
They should have gone the Battlestar Galactica route. They say frack all the
time.
Yeah,
that, like, was brilliant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, wow.
I'm going to hump, like, you.
trying to imagine someone saying that to me and me being like, oh God, no thank
it's
you.
It's so silly. It's so, I laugh every, it's like four or five seasons in and they're still doing it and I laugh every single time. It's, yeah. So it's just the power of language and the words that people are triggered by and the ways that those, like, I love that, like, the word cunt feels like one of the few that still gets a reaction out of people. And I love that reaction. Like, there are words that should make you not necessarily uncomfortable, but kind of, like, it should signal to you that there is something else going on here and that maybe I am being crude and I'm being crude for a reason. And, like, that sometimes that's appropriate.
That's right. I used to be adamantly for it. Against the word cunt. Until I started reading more fan fiction, probably. and also when I realized that, like, vagina comes from Latin for scabbard, you know, you're the scabbard for someone else's sword. And I feel like cunt is a little more its own word. To me, it's like almost a little more empowering in a weird way.
No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, even like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, because we didn't encounter it very much in romance and the sex scenes, unless it was like a very crude situation, it was even a turnoff for me. And I'm not really sure exactly where, like, my tipping point came to where I really liked it. But I remember, I think it was, I was reading Ruby Dixon's Ice Planet series, and her barbarians use cunt all the time. And it's for that same reason, you know, it's a vulgar word. It's a base word. And so it feels right for the situation they're in. And so I mean, it's not going to make sense if you're, like, maybe necessarily, you know, with some two people who are very not very vulgar, that they're going to use it. But if you're in a situation where they are vulgar, yes, of course they're going to use it. And I like it better than necessarily making up a word. I think in a lot of situations you do have to make up words, like, you know, in sci-fi, maybe they won't say fuck because it doesn't make necessarily make sense that they would have that in there. In their etymology, but wait, is it etymology? One of them is the insects and one of them is
etymology.
The yes,
etymology is the bugs.
And I always get them mixed up, of course. So it wouldn't necessarily make sense that they have fuck in their lexicon, but of course they have some kind of analog that is like that, because who doesn't have vulgar words in their own language? Everybody does. So, however,
like as humans, we've always had those words. Those words have changed, but we've always used them. And I find that a fascinating criticism of historical writers too, where people will be like, well, they wouldn't have said that. And it's like, yeah, they would have said something, but the word that they would have said would sound ridiculous to you. So
right.
Like, we're not going to use that word. We're going to use the word that you understand to mean this thing that they would have said. Like, mm-hmm. We've always found ways to be vulgar. So like, yeah, it's... I think right. I see it more, historical romance authors seem to stay away from it altogether because I think there is such heavy criticism. But when I read more just like straight historical fiction that's set in like the ancient world or whatever, people will be like, well, they didn't say fuck in the ancient world. And it's like, yeah, they did. They just didn't use that word.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So switching gears really quickly, you design a lot of covers. Did you design your covers for this series?
No, I didn't. In fact... I was kind of thinking that it was going to be more like, so if you're listening and you aren't sure what we're about to talk about, the covers for this series, they're kind of
are so good.
A half a barbarian guy, like he's split down. That sounds awful. He's not split down the middle. Like
just the torso of a barbarian.
Yeah. So they dressed up. In fact, they did these cover shoots for these, and then they sent me kind of pictures as they were doing it. But so they dressed up these guys in, like, you know, the leather kilts and furs, and then they put it on a plain black background. And then the lettering is like this metallic kind of rusted metal letters. And it's very blocky, and honestly... it was the opposite of what I expected. And I didn't know what at all to expect, but I had sent them, because every time we do like these, they have these cover conferences. And so they asked me to send in my notes with descriptions of the characters. And so because I kind of overdo everything in life, I sent like 8 pages to my editor saying, you know, this is kind of like what I think it should kind of look like, but it was really hard because I didn't have like anything within the genre to compare it to. I was trying really hard to find like other barbarian fantasy romances that were like this. And I'm sure there are some, because there's no way that I'm going to be the first person to be writing this kind of thing. But I couldn't find any that were exactly what I liked or that had a look that I enjoyed. And I know that they were kind of leaning toward the Game of Thrones style of look, but my head was still in romance. So I was kind of expecting something like, you know, the C.L. Wilson covers where they're kind of like have the clinch or just the guy who's there and he's surrounded by like lots of stuff. And so the Heart of Blood and Ashes cover showed up in my inbox, and I think I stared at it for like 5 minutes, and then I emailed my editor, and I was like, I just don't know what to think. I was like, I like this, but I've never seen anything quite like it, and so I don't know what to think, and because the purpose of it is to sell books and to tell people what kind of book it is exactly, but usually you have a reference of other books to like kind of cement or anchor where your opinion is, like, you know, oh, that's better than that, or that's worse than that. And and I was like, I just don't know. but then I looked at it again and again. I was like, I really, really like this. I didn't know what to think of it because it wasn't anything like I had expected for the genre. But now that I look at it again, I think, you know, these are perfect books. I mean, perfect covers for the books. And so it was just that moment of trying to shift, you know, what your expectations were to what you got. because, you know, oftentimes in genre fiction, there's just like a look to something that you're going to get some variation of that. And it was just a lot farther from the variation than I expected. So it took me a little bit of adjustment time, but I love it. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. I love that. A Touch of Stone and Snow is my favorite of the covers. Like, I just love the way there's a little bit of 3D realism of like his hand coming out. But then I also yeah. love that he's got like a furred kilt and metal and like armor on his neck and his head and his shoulders, and then his abs are just bare. Yes, I love it.
I know this is like where you hit the mix of absurd and like wonderful because it's so ridiculous as armor, but as like a visual, it's like, okay, that works, you know, because yeah. you get exactly the sense that this is some barbarian warrior guy. And who just happens to flash his abs to get you to buy the book.
But to distract his enemies.
I put a link to
it. It's also like, you see, anytime women have armor in a lot of fantasy things, it's just like so unrealistic, or like guarding the wrong things, or like the breastplate that's actually going to split your sternum in two if anyone actually hits it. Like, and so this is like your turn to be like, yeah, this man is covered from head to shoulder and then just entire torso just available to attack.
Yeah, actually, when I first showed it to a friend of mine, she was like, it's like Red Sonja armor, but for him.
Yes, like, it really is. It is.
And I put a link to an article that in glamour.com that I loved that's about that cover shoot, Sarah. And it's like they've got the model, the sort of out of context pictures where it's not on the cover. And it's kind of hilarious and awesome at the same time. And then at the very end, they have a picture of him in the like the armor that you're talking about, but you can see it front on with the Berkeley publicity team around him, like Aaron's in the picture. And he's huge and looks ridiculous and it's hilarious.
Wait, I want to see that picture. Where is
that? I put the link in the little messages box.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so good.
My editor was texting me as they were doing this cover shoot and like they were putting the wig on him because he has white hair, and so they put the wig on him and I was like, oh my God, please no.
Like, and like it works on the cover, but when you see all of him, you're like, oh my God, this is so bad.
I love it.
You're like, oh, hello Elsa. But yeah, it worked out at the end.
Barbarian Elsa.
No, it was, but I mean, I just have to say, you know, I love my editor and I love what Berkeley and the publicity team has done for this book, because I mean, from the packaging to everything, I mean, it's just been amazing that they've been able to create this, like, you know, look for it that is so perfect for it. And I love that.
They do such a good job of being on the cutting edge of that stuff and having the kind of boldness to look at it and do exactly what you said, where it's like, I've never seen anything quite like this before, but mm-hmm. I like it. And, you know, a lot of people would be scared to take that path, and they do it and it works so well. Mm-hmm. I feel like they were right on the front end of all the illustrated covers.
Yeah. And now it's nothing but illustrated covers. So it's refreshing to see non-illustrated ones at this point.
Yeah. But when they were first doing it, it was like, what is this? Like, I don't understand. And, you know, now we all understand, but it was just so engaging and interesting and different. And that's these covers. Everything, like, I love that it's black in the background. They could have put like dragons and castles and it could have been this like ridiculous fantasy cover. But the simplicity of the black behind him is like, so it makes it pop and it's engaging and it draws me in. And I love them. These are some of my favorite covers.
Oh my. And I don't know if you have been able to like get a copy of the paperback of the first one, especially like A Heart of Blood and Ashes. This is like the craziest thing to mention, but the cover is so velvety. It's like, you know, normally you get like a matte cover and that's one thing, but this is like some velvety texture or something.
Those covers that you like want to stroke.
Yes, it really is. And so, you know, I love the cover just like visually. But when it came in and the book came in, I think I like sat there and like rubbed it for like 5 minutes. I was like, oh, what is that? Because it was like nothing like I had quite ever felt on a book before. So if you get your hands on a on a paperback, everyone, it's like
start
really
petting
nice.
It. Mm-hmm. Well, now I want like a special edition hardcover that's lined in faux fur and like banded in iron.
Oh my God. That would be Take the best happen, thing ever. And she's like snuggling in against him. Like you can rub yourself with the book and like get that feeling. You too can know what it's like to be loved by a barbarian. Fur. Except for, you know, it'd have to be like smellier or something.
Well, you don't need to go that realistic. Smells like sweat and blood.
I know. That's like one of those things like, you know, like I have in book three, they're just like traveling a lot and like it becomes apparent. I'm like, he's got to smell so bad by now. He's got to smell so bad by now. But luckily he's wearing like a heavy fur all the time and she's not close to him at this point. So, oh, I was just like, oh, he's got to be smelling so bad right now. You know, so there's like this plan, like when are they going to take a bath? And it has to be like before like any like intimate stuff happens or else because you know that readers think about that and they're going to be thinking.
I think about it. Right? It bothers me every time someone's like has sex like immediately after they get out of a pool or like after everyone's been exercising heavily or after days on the road. I'm like, oh, guys, just like a little sponge bath with some rainwater, something.
Wait, why can't they do it when they get out of a pool?
I don't know. Isn't it like gross and chloriney and wet?
You,
I don't know.
You have way, your standards are way too high. You can't have sex in the pool then?
Well, no, because I thought like in the pool, it's unhealthy. Right? You don't want to get chlorine up in your bits?
I can't say I have been concerned about that when it's been happening.
Well, I've never had pool sex, so I
You've
suppose...
never had pool sex?
No.
I'm upset.
Okay. Well, maybe
We've
someone will
here.
Offer.
I apologize, but there's like a weightlessness to it. It should happen.
Okay. All right. I'm taking
Forget
notes.
Your concerns about chlorine. My bits survived. It's going to be okay.
And if you're really concerned as an author, you know, make it a saltwater pool and then everything is all taken care of.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Then it's like the ocean, right? I mean, the ocean is not bad for the bits, I wouldn't think.
I think, I don't know.
Like, as long as you stay off the beach, that's when they have beach sex. And I'm like, no, sand in the bits.
And like, don't do it anywhere where like, or where like the penis fish is. Like, don't do it anywhere where that exists.
Oh, man.
Is that like the Amazon? Are you talking about the fish that goes up the stream? Yeah, no.
Yeah. I don't know if it does that just when people are peeing or if it would happen when someone's coming too. I've never actually researched that.
Like it jumps through the spurt? I mean, like,
well,
I don't know.
Please go find whatever scientist is like excited about this and email them. This email would make their career.
Okay, I am searching penis
because
fish
someone
cum
is like the
right
world
now.
Expert on these fish and they want to be asked, Sarah. They're just sitting there waiting for someone to ask. Okay, are we doing our wrap-up questions?
Oh, I guess we should. But I had one more question first. Okay. I think I saw that you have theoretically 6 books planned out for this world, but in little 3-book arcs. Is that right?
That's correct. And it's because, you know, I wasn't really sure, like, how it would be received. And, you know, I had a kind of a burnout a couple of years back, and I didn't want to be in a situation where I was, like, locked into a series that I wasn't finishing and that was maybe just like shedding readers constantly. And so I thought, you know what, I'll just set it up so that I do it as 3 books and then 3 books. And then if I don't get to the, you know, books 4, 5, and 6, we're still in a place where we feel like we have a good story arc and a good finish and everybody's happy, even though, you know, maybe they would want more books, but that way it kind of made me have more peace of mind as a storyteller.
Does that mean the Destroyer actually comes back in book 3 if it could wrap up happily? Because spoiler alert, the Destroyer is coming back. Sorry.
No, I think it's okay to spoil that. Yeah, he is coming back in book 3.
You don't have to tell us everything.
Yeah, no, that's all I'll say. He's coming back in book 3. That storyline wraps up. And I think you're probably part of your surprise is like, whoa, that's a lot that's going to happen in book 3. Uh-huh. And it's going to be a very big book. So I think that it's like basically 2 books in length. So Awesome. Yeah, it'll wrap up.
Cool.
I like it.
Yeah, so okay, we have these questions. Yeah. They call them rapid fire, but you don't have to answer fast. They are just questions. Yep. That's
random.
Yeah. Great intro, Sarah.
I'm glad. I was like, I'll let Sarah describe it because she'll do a better job than me.
No.
You would think after whatever we're at, 140 something episodes,
we would have
figured out how to describe this better, but
you know,
we have not.
Nope. Okay. Should I start?
Yes.
Okay. Who is the best villain ever?
King Haggard from The Last Unicorn.
Oh.
And the reason is because I love his motivation. It's that he really desperately wanted to be happy, and the unicorns made him happy. And so he began, you know, shoving them into a place where he could always see them, and so that he could always be happy looking at them. And I thought that's just a really great motivation for a villain, in that it's kind of like he's just searching for something and he's not finding it. And the thing that he does find is kind of terrible for everybody else, but he kind of doesn't care because at least he's happy.
Hmm. I like that.
Fair. What is the most interesting object in your workspace?
Oh, in my workspace? I have to look through all the clutter. My biscuit that I have left here from breakfast. I would say most interesting. I'm a really boring person, man.
See, you think you are, but I guarantee, what do you have in your workspace that like, I don't have in mine?
Except for that shrunken head. Like,
like it's yeah, like, not all post-it notes and there's
right,
something
like right
there.
Here next to me is like this rogue figure from the X-Men movies that I've had forever, even though I hated that Rogue, that version of Rogue. Like, you know, the Anna Paquin version from, I think it was like 1999. Mm. Or on my left-hand side is my Wonder Woman piggy bank, which doesn't have any money in it, but I just like it looking at me because it's a Wonder Woman pig. Or beneath the Wonder Woman pig are about four journals that I write like one page in and then abandon for the rest of their life. Like
that's
I have
how I do
it's
journals
always reassuring
too.
To me when other people do this. Like to know that this
so
is almost
many.
A universal experience always makes me really calm.
I have so many planners, you guys. I could like it's like this stack of planners. And like I might get through like 4 or 5 days and then it's like and then I think, well maybe I just need like a different type of planner. Like I'll use a bullet journal and then I'll use like one of those moleskin ones. And then so I like change up all these different things and no, it never works. I'm not a planner.
I found peace with my bullet journal, which I tried to be very good at for a while. And then it devolved into like a creative writing notebook. And so it looks like, I would say it kind of looks like I had a mental breakdown because it's all the neat, like the washi tape and the neat lines. And then it turns into like scribbled maps of fantasy worlds and like just sentences here and there. I love it. So now I use it as both. I use it to jot down ideas and packing lists. And then sometimes at work, if I need to keep track of tasks, but it's nowhere near organized. It's like the whole page is just like a big cluttery thing. And sometimes it's just me scribbling, fuck, really, really big in the margins.
Yeah, that's kind of what mine are like. Like I'll, like the first day or two, it'll be like really organized. And then I'll have it's like open. There's one that's open right here. And it has like a list from, I think, June or July. I'm not really sure, but I don't think I did any of those things anyway. They don't really help me.
Yeah. Okay. What is something that scares you, but not in like a really depressing way? We clear because like once someone was like, well, everyone I love dying. And it's like, okay, that's a bummer. I was thinking spiders.
I would say just like not being able to write again. I mean, that might be depressing, but you know, after I went through the block, I mean, I was still writing the entire time, but just feeling like you couldn't get your words to do what you wanted them to do. And like, no matter how hard you dug for a story, it wouldn't come out. And everything that did come out just seemed like it was just crap. I think that would probably be what scares me the most, is like kind of losing that ability to, because, you know, the writing didn't go away. It was more like the ability, like I still can't, my steampunker is still broken and I still can't write the steampunk stuff. So, I mean, losing that in a, like the fantasy version or whatever else I have to do, that's kind of terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Fair. What is the last book that kept you up reading?
Oh, the last one.
We won't know if you're telling us the truth. So
I've been finishing book three, so I've been not reading as much, and I have to actually like make sure it's the last one.
It can just be the last one you remember too.
Well, I read Alyssa Cole's what is it called? When No One Is Watching, or her thriller.
Yeah, her thriller. Mm-hmm.
So that one, I read that in pieces, and I am not a pieces reader. I'm like I sit down and I read a book and it's all the way through, but I've been trying to read pieces instead. So I had it in my car with me and I would read it whenever I was like waiting for my husband somewhere or something. But the last one it was a Jessica Cain book because hers are really short and they're hot, and I enjoy them. I think she does the short and hot really well, as she's she finds these ways to turn a phrase in a sex scene that is unlike anyone else I write, because when you read sex scenes, sometimes they become very rote and, not necessarily samey, but in a way they are kind of samey, which doesn't mean I'm uninterested in them. I just am. But she just has this way of describing like arousal and all the things that go on during sex that is unlike anybody else I read. And so I'm just really fascinated by her writing, and it's so short. And so that way when I'm on deadline, I can still fit in something to read, and it's hot and nice and there's a happy ever after.
You need to check that out.
That's one that generates romance. Always recommends. Okay. Jessica Cain and, why am I blanking? I recorded one of her audiobooks.
Whoops.
Yeah. Well, I know her real name. I just can't think of her pen name.
Oops.
Nope. It'll come to me.
Someday. Oh, well. It'll become once we finish recording.
But yeah, some authors just seem to have a knack for those like really short, dirty books that are just like exactly the like mental sugar hit that you need.
Exactly. Exactly. And they, like Jessica Cain, some of them, I would say, if for anybody, like, definitely read the descriptions, because there's some that kind of push into taboo territory that you might not be comfortable with, and then some others are not so much. But I see the last one I read was like My Husband, My Stalker, and so there was like that stalking element, and he lies to her because he's like really this hitman, but he pretends to be like this straight guy that's, not a hitman. but there's like this level of obsession there that is like kind of nice to read in very short blasts, because then it doesn't feel as like a long stalking like weirdness, but it's just more like this is like the fantasy. It's very much, the fantasy of it rather than like, and so you don't really have time to get kind of really weirded out by it. but it's they're a lot of fun.
Awesome. What is something you irrationally hate?
John Cusack. Like, I can't watch his movies because of his face. And, like, I don't know why or when, because, like, I know that, like, there's a lot of movies that he's in that people love, but there's just something. But Julia Roberts is the same way. Like, I watched Pretty Woman, like everybody did my age, because she came out, but that movie came out like I was in junior high. And but after that, I just couldn't stand her in anything. So John Cusack and Julia Roberts are my irrational hates.
Poor things.
I know. Oh, and Ed Norton too. But
Edward Norton.
I was with you, but Edward Norton.
Edward Norton is a treasure.
I know, yeah. But and that's the thing. But that's why it's irrational hate. It's like one of those things where you just see him, and it's like, oh no, I can't do it, and I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. I'm guessing that like there's probably something I watched with them, and it just had a bad experience, and I don't know how to and they're connected, but I don't know why. So
fascinating. If I was going to use an object to summon you with spell, what would it be?
Anything with Wonder Woman on it. Like, seriously, no. Like I love Wonder Woman so much. And that's probably like the root of all my books and all of my heroines and everything else is seeing Super Friends or seeing Linda Carter as Wonder Woman when I was a little girl. And I just loved her so much. And that never really went away, even though, you know, of course, it, you know, came out in different forms. But man, I love Wonder Woman.
Who is someone you professionally admire?
Oh, there's so many. Professionally. I'm going to say probably Ruby Dixon lately, especially because I should say that she's a friend too, so that there's full disclosure there. But she is a friend, but, you know, especially like after you go through, you know, feeling like a slow writer and then, you know, having issues getting words out, and then to see somebody who's very professional and consistent and consistently good, and who also interacts with their fans in such a genuine and fun way and is very generous with them. I just really admire that a lot. And then of course Nalini Singh, and because I actually have this thing in my head as, you know, what would Nalini do in any situation? Uh-huh. And, you know, especially like on social media, or if I think, you know, if I'm doubting myself, like, what is my reaction or what should I say? I kind of say to myself, what would Nalini do? And then, because she is just the sweetest, most amazing professional person too. And she's also a friend. So, that sounds like really odd. Like I'm just like, you know, saying, my friends I admire. But I think that's part of, you know, when you become friends with people, especially as an author, a lot of it is you either share interests in like books that you enjoy reading. So you start talking and then that develops into a deeper friendship that way. Or, you know, you admire each other's work. And so you start talking and then it develops into a friendship that way. And so, you know, Nalini and I, we share an editor too. And so we've just had a lot of, you know, meetings or different conversations through the last, 10, 15 years. And, you know, I'm just always just amazed by her professionalism and her generosity and her talent. I mean, my God, she's an amazing writer. So those are, I guess I just said two people, hey, I can't ever just do one.
Okay.
No, those are good answers though.
Yeah. It's been awesome talking to you. So the series in question, for anyone listening, it's A Gathering of Dragons. First two books are out, and the third is on its way next year.
And a novella. There's two books and a novella out.
Uh-huh. If readers want to learn more about you, find you online, where should they go?
To my website, to millavane.com. And also, if you are reading and you're like the type of fantasy reader who loves maps, the maps are there on the website. Just so you can, like, you know, orient yourself as you're reading. I think it helps a lot of people. And I'm also on Twitter every once in a while, because more lately, but it's at Millavane, I think is my username. And then, of course, Facebook and Instagram as like author Millavane.
Yeah. And don't email her about the word fuck.
Oh, God.
I will be very disappointed in you.
Unless it's like, I love it when you use the word fuck. I'm like, use it more.
I mean, if anyone is offended by the word fuck, they're not listening to us. So
yeah. That's true.
There's a filtering process there.
Oh, no, I love you guys. I want to thank you so much for inviting me in. I mean, it's still kind of like really surprising at the beginning when you're like, my list of people to get in is as one as me, and I'm like, you could have had me anytime. I'm like, super easy.
Well, I wish I'd known that.
It's like one of those things where it's like, I'm just like, you know, this little dork sitting in my office. I'm available anytime.
Be careful now that we know this.
Yeah, we'll have you back all the time.
And thank you so much. I tried to like speak more slowly, so I'm sorry if it sounds like really slow. But I'm like
you're doing great.
Fast talker people too, so I didn't want to be like too much.
It's a weird thing to get used to hearing your own voice. Like, I think Sarah and I are past it now, but pretty much every guest is like, why do I sound weird? And we're like, you don't, I promise.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you, I'm not going to be able to listen to this because it's exactly that. I always feel like I'm just mortified, but then I can't listen to like audiobooks of my own work either. It's just like this weird mortification that kicks in, like, oh my God, nobody's ever going to like listen or read to me, read anything I write again after they hear my voice and hear me speak. And I'm just, you know, it's
a really common reaction. Wow. Like the first few times I heard myself on other people's podcasts, I was like, I just wanted to go hide in a hole somewhere. And it's been a like exposure therapy where I'm used to it now. But
I mean, it's true because like everybody else that I ever listen to, nobody sounds as dumb as I sound, right? I mean, it's just true. Everybody always sounds like, you know, they know what they're talking about and they don't have like any pauses for thought. And so I envy everybody. Or maybe it's just good editing. It's all good editing.
Yeah. No, we loved talking to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you are still with us and you've made it this far, you are now going to be rewarded with an audio preview of Desperate Measures by Katie Robert, which is the first book in her Wicked Villains series. And it kicks off the series with Jasmine and Jafar. So this preview starts at chapter 3 rather than chapter 1. Because, I don't know, I wanted you to have a taste of Jafar's voice. Not that Jasmine's isn't wonderful. And in those early chapters, shenanigans have happened. Very hot ones, very rapidly. Everything is consensual. It's spelled out beautifully. And at this point in chapter 3, Jasmine has kind of lost her place in the world. And when her father has been overthrown, she is going with Jafar. The dynamic between them seems like she's his captive, but it is entirely her choice to go with him. And, you know, she can leave at any point. And even if she's being bratty, that's the case. And yeah, so this kicks off with Jafar trying to process the fact that, you know, he has gotten what he wants, but she is a lot to handle. And, you know, is he the man for the job? So with no further ado, here is an audio preview of Desperate Measures by Katie Robert.
Chapter 3, Jafar. 5 years of maintaining perfect control, and I've thrown it away in a single night. Anyone else would call the events of the last few hours a complete and utter victory. I look at the woman curled up on the seat next to me, her long legs tucked under the shirt that I put on her. Jasmine will wear my bruises in the morning, marks on her hips from my fingers, and marks on her knees from the marble floor. That doesn't concern me. She made her choice with eyes wide open, and I'm a bastard because I look forward to every single power struggle in the future spinning out between us. Connected. Forever. She's mine now, the same way her father's fortune and business and allies are now mine. My gaze tracks the curve of the bruise darkening her cheekbone. It's not particularly brutal as bruises go, but what it represents has an inferno of fury spiraling up through me. That fucker kept her in a cage, playing the doting father when it served his purposes, and sold her to that little shit of an upstart. Then he had the audacity to strike her when she protested. I'm no better than he is in so many ways, but when I strike a woman, it's because she damn well wants it, because she gets off on it. Balthazar Saraf hit his daughter the same way a man kicks a dog because it didn't immediately follow his orders. It's a shame he's already dead, because I would happily kill him for this sin alone. Stop staring at me. She turns and stares out the window. She doesn't look away as we drive into town and the city creeps up around us. It strikes me that she's never seen any of this before. Saraf kept expansive and immaculate grounds, surrounded by a truly impressive wall and security system. He may have traveled extensively, but his daughter had been confined to the property. For her safety, of course. To keep her under his thumb, more like. I have no high horse to stand on when it comes to that. I want Jasmine confined, too. My collar on her neck, its chain never far from my hand. I want her on her knees in subservience. I want to fucking ruin her. If there's a good guy in this scenario, it's not my part to play. I let the silence drag out as we pass through the streets. This time of night, Carver City is far from empty, but the traffic that plagues the streets during rush hour is long gone. It barely takes us an hour before my driver pulls into the underground parking garage that is our destination. He parks and waits, as he's trained to do. I own the building. The security here is above reproach, but I prefer it to be understated. Cameras and tech instead of burly guards, reminding a person that they constantly had to watch their words, their actions, their tells. Better for my purposes that they forget themselves. I climb out of the car and take a step back, waiting for her to follow me. I should know better by now. Jasmine crosses her arms over her chest and glares.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to heal?
A good pet would. Her dark eyes flash in anger, and fuck if I don't enjoy it. She's beautiful in a fierce way that demands the attention of any room she enters. Long, wavy black hair, light brown skin, and a mouth made to wrap around my cock. Those lips form words that have my blood heating in response.
Fuck you.
I did. I bend down and snag her ankle, towing her across the seat. She tries to kick me in the face, her first show of spirit since I put my shirt on her. It soothes something in me that I refuse to examine too closely. She's no good to me damaged, no matter what narrative she uses to attempt to write what happened. We both know the truth. I pull her out of the car, spin her around, and bend her over the trunk. Jasmine, I say mildly, tell me your safe word. The slightest of hesitations, as if she wants to refuse me this. Finally, she spits it out.
Raja.
I lean over her, letting the weight of my body pin her in place. You wanted me to save you from the deal your father made. I did. This is my price. I could take her here, like this, and she'll curse me to hell and back, but she'll thrust back on my cock and scream my name as she comes. It's not the time for that. I'm dancing on the edge of reason with her already, and any more tonight is a mistake. It takes several precious moments to reclaim control of myself. We can stay here all night and fight if you want, but there's a meal, a bath, and a bed upstairs. The only person your resistance hurts is yourself.
You're crazy if you think I'll sleep in your bed.
I chuckle, knowing it will make her see red. A place in my bed isn't punishment, Jasmine. It's a reward. A reward you haven't earned. Not by half. Her indignant huff makes me smile, though I smooth out my expression before I take a step back and allow her to turn around. She shoves her hair out of her eyes just so she can shoot me a glare. You're a dick, and you're a brat. I motion to the elevators. Want to continue to trade insults, or do you want to go up?